Well, our paths probably crossed, what, 20-odd years ago, Alan, something like
yes,
that?
Yes, it's lovely to be back in the bosom of the ABC. It's been a while. I've been editing and doing work on other people's books, but I finally got down to writing my own book. So yeah. It's lovely to see you, though.
Nice to see you. Yeah, because you can check out any time you like.
Both
you can...
a bit older and greyer. But
am I grey?
No, you're fine. I'm fine. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you. Now, the reason you're hearing the voice of Alan Atkinson is because, as you've just heard, he's been doing some freelance editing and stuff like that, but has put together his own book. It's called The Trials of Billy Freeman. And, Alan, I'd like you to start, if you can, by just telling us how this happened, because it's quite an interesting story, just how you suddenly became, well, this guy became a part of your life.
Well, it was a surprise to me, I'll tell you. I got a call a few years ago from my sister in England in the middle of the night, you know, as they do. Relatives in England have no idea what time it is here. So 4 a.m., I get this call from my sister. And she says, guess what? And I said, well, I'm asleep. You know, guess what? No, guess what? You've got an ancestor in the Adelaide Hills. And not only that, he's a convict, an ex-convict. And I said, what? Because I had lived in Adelaide and the hills for years and worked at the ABC, and I'd gone through Strathalbyn and Macclesfield and Meadows and down to Goulburn many, many times. I knew the hills so well, I had never had any idea that I had any connection with Australia, a personal connection. Mm. My wife's family, yes, they all came out on early ships, but I had no idea. So this was a big, big surprise. But my sister had gone online, as you do, with all this family history, ancestry research, and she'd found the Macclesfield Community History Group, a wonderful group of people down in Macclesfield, and the Freeman family, really relatives of Billy Freeman, had researched him already, and he was a really colourful character. Now, why would I say he's colourful? I mean, a lot of things happened in his life, and I'll get to it, but colourful in particular because in middle age he'd become a successful small farmer in the hills. In middle age, he and his wife Sarah were sent to Adelaide Jail in their 50s for burning down their first daughter's house. It was just a small hole in the ground, you know, with a thatched roof. Mm. But so they ended up, Sarah was pregnant, she'd had several children already. And they found themselves in the Supreme Court, which is now the old Magistrates Court, the Supreme Court, photographed in the book. And the jury, and they're found guilty of arson, Sarah of arson. I'm not sure she did it, but Billy may have incited her to do it. They were both found guilty of arson. And the judge said he'd go easy on them. 2 years hard labour in Adelaide Jail. Mm. So
lenient.
That was a low point in Billy's life. So this was my great-great-great uncle, and the discoveries kept coming. I mean, I just found it so fascinating, so I wanted to find out more about his background.
Okay, so let's rewind a little bit, if we can, please, Alan. For a start, I mean, South Australia supposedly had no convict settlements as settlers. Billy came to Australia as a convict in about 1832, didn't he?
Yeah. I'd just go back a little bit just to give you a hint of his character, if I may. Because he was born in Somerset in time of great poverty. And he and his father worked in a cloth mill. The cloth mill closed, and Billy, aged 11, went to Trowbridge in Wiltshire with his father looking for work. It was great starvation, poverty, whatever. That's where he first got into trouble. Mm. He got into trouble a lot in his life. By 12, he'd been jailed twice for thieving and whipped. And then he made his biggest mistake, which was stealing £6 of cheese. 7 years transportation, imagine that. Age 12, being shackled with other prisoners, being dragged across the Salisbury Plain to a ship in London. He didn't go on a ship straight away because he spent the next 15 months on a prison hulk in the Thames, in the mud flats of the Thames. Britain used these prison hulks because the prisons were all overcrowded. So it was only in 1831, 15 months later, that he set sail finally for Sydney, the motley crowd of other prisoners. And he arrived in 1832 on his own, aged 14.
Wow.
Right? Imagine that, to arrive on your own in a strange country like Australia.
And I've got the surgeon's journal of that journey, and it was horrific. You know, prisoners all crammed together, a lot of sickness, a lot of deaths on the trip, and Billy survived with his health intact. So what happened then? Billy had a lucky break, because he was indentured to a wealthy pastoralist called John Hordon, who fed and trained him. And over the next 5 years, Billy became good and learned all the skills you do indentured to a pastoralist, so building and riding and mustering cattle and all that. Big question, how the hell did Billy get from New South Wales to Adelaide?
To Adelaide, to Macclesfield, to the hills.
And this was exciting research, and there were a lot of clues in all sorts of places, like, you know, the National Library's Trove Research Centre. You can look up newspapers from the time and all sorts of things. So just going back to that arson court case that we mentioned at the beginning, there were two testimonials for Billy. One was from Edward Sterling, the businessman and landowner in the hills, after which Sterling is named, who said he'd known Billy for 20 years and he was a man of great honesty and all that. Now, the other testimonial was the biggest surprise. And this was one of the biggest names in Australian exploration, Captain Charles Sturt, so, who explored the Murray right down to Goulburn in 1830, as you know. And I found in a court case in black and white, which said Freeman came to South Australia in 1838 with Charles Sturt. And that journey was one of Sturt's forgotten journeys. It's not much written about. And he was trying to make money by droving cattle, much needed cattle, to South Australia. So that's, and I found Sturt's journal of that journey, and it's fascinating. His writing about trying to drove cattle through small tracts and over swamps and over deserts and all that, watched by Aboriginal people in bewilderment, you know, seeing these white guys trying to get cattle to South Australia. They finally arrived at Mount Lofty exhausted. It was an exhausting trip, but that's how Billy arrived in the hills.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would have been 1838?
That was 1838. Sturt had done his big exploration of the river in 1830 and gone to Goolwa. So he followed the same route, and he and two other explorers, Joseph Hordon and Edward Eyre, both sent cattle drives in 1838.
So here he is. Here's this young man who's turned the corner. He's no longer a criminal. He's found himself in South Australia, and somehow he has to make a life here.
Yes.
And what happens next?
Well, he's working for Sterling and probably for John Finnis, who was a former whaler who was Sturt's second in command, and he would have been looking after the cattle. Up in the hills or down at the big cattle yard on West Terrace. So I can only surmise that he worked for Sterling for quite some time because of that reference that Sterling gave him at his trial. So he worked and he got land. He finally bought land near Sander Grove, where he lived, near Strathalbyn. I've got the people at the Alexandrina Libraries were so brilliant at helping me out. They've actually found the little plot of land where he first started off. So he was a wheat farmer, he became a mailman, he became a drover, a deliverer of wheat, and a successful small businessman. So not a famous name, but one of those many people, those small farmers who made a go of it in the hills.
Yes, yeah. Well, he's in fertile country there. Yeah. Look, I just wanted to refer to one of the images in your book. Alan, I'm speaking with Alan Atkinson. He's the author of The Trials of Billy Freeman. Billy Freeman, you wouldn't have heard of before, but he came into Alan's life and was very much a pioneer of establishing agriculture, particularly around Strathalbyn, Macclesfield, in that area.
And there are quite a lot of Freemans up in the hills.
Well, I was going to say, look, if this is ringing a bell with you, if you live in the Macclesfield, Strathalbyn area, or if you've had relatives in that area, and this is resonating with you, the lines are open, 1300 222 891. I'd love to hear from you. Billy's Certificate of Freedom, dated 1837, he's described as a labourer for Somerset. He's 5'5" tall, so he's not a big man, with a sallow complexion, dark brown hair and brown eyes, and with a flat nose and a scar over his right eyebrow.
He's been in trouble.
Yeah. I actually didn't know that a certificate of freedom was a thing. So this is to suggest that you had served your time, and all is forgiven.
There were several levels of freedom you could get. One was an absolute freedom, I think, which the governor handed out to a few people. The highest level which Billy got was a certificate of freedom, which meant that he was technically a free man. Below that came a ticket of leave, which meant people could travel, but they couldn't necessarily leave Australia. But Billy, with a certificate of freedom, was entitled to go back to the UK. Two things against that. A, the British government didn't want convicts back, and B, it was prohibitively expensive. So Billy never went back, never met his family, never saw his family again. But he got, but coming to South Australia with its notion that we are convict free, and people still talk about South Australia being a convict free state, I think he lived under that sense of disapproval of convicts and ex-convicts, because officially the government, even though people were not transported here on ships, they came, as Billy did, in their hundreds on the cattle drives across country.
Yes.
And they helped build the state. They knew how to cut down trees, to cut saplings, to build fences, to build houses, and work the ground, which a lot of the English farmers had no idea about in Australia. But Billy had all that experience working in New South Wales. But I still think he lived under that sense of disapproval, and he probably was never slow in coming forward. He got himself into trouble all sorts of times.
And he was also fertile, as was his
wife.
Well,
a lot of them were.
Yeah.
A lot of them were. I think Sarah was very long-suffering, but also had 10 or 11 children. He's buried with Sarah and a child who died at age 9. In the old Church of England Cemetery in Macclesfield. So I know where he's buried.
But he
had a long life. He was a wheat farmer, a mailman, a butcher. He was feisty to the end. I mean, he lost all his money in the end because of downturns and droughts, and he'd gone through bushfires a lot.
This all sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
And then all went pear-shaped. I mean, South Australia went bankrupt in the 1840s, but saved by wheat and saved by copper and all the things like that. But Billy's last court case, he had a few, was against a preacher who had stolen £25 from him, which is his last money, which he wanted to put a gravestone up for his wife, Sarah, who died a few years earlier. Billy lived till 81. But he took this preacher to court, and the preacher had to pay back the money.
Wow.
He was still fighting in the end.
That's a lot of money
in
that era.
I know.
And you mentioned the way South Australia recovered, and that was largely driven by the discovery of copper and all the Cornish miners that came out to Moonta, Wallaroo, all through that area.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at one point, we were actually exporting wheat to Victoria, and Strathalbyn was still a prosperous place before the railway took over, because it was the last stop on the way to the goldfields as well. So during the goldfields time, we were supplying lots of people going to the goldfields across the lake, and we became quite wealthy in lots of ways. And the copper was, of course, one of the things. But during the gold rushes, even the copper mines were deserted because people rushed off to Victoria.
Yes.
So we had this. I've learned so much about South Australian history, which I never really understood about. I mean, for example, do you know that we had a prison hulk floating off Largs Bay in the 1880s?
No.
I mean, just this, Britain was getting rid of all those hulks around the coast of Britain. We had our own hulk. We bought an old ship from Victoria and put boys in there off Largs Bay. And there was terrible conditions. Royal Commission into it got closed down. It was sold to the Port River. But three of Billy's grandchildren were on that hulk as well.
Kidding.
You know, what an irony.
Yeah.
Shocking irony. But something I didn't know, and a lot of people don't seem to know.
A couple of questions.
Yeah.
It may not be able to answer them, but someone's wondering, Dave's wondering whether Freeman's Knob at Port Elliot is maybe named after the family.
That's, I don't think so. I don't think so. I haven't looked into that carefully, but I, yeah, you'd probably better ask the Alexandrina Library people.
Yeah, because Freeman is a very common name.
It's a common name up there, and there are a lot of Freemans there, and I've had a lot of help from Freeman relatives in the hills in writing this book, because quite a few people have written about Billy, but this is to me is more comprehensive because of the connection with Charles Sturt. Mm. He mentioned, he's so famous, he mentioned the Sturt Desert Peas talking to the governor.
And I see the name Bagot appears in there as well. And Bagot was the, they were the architects, weren't they? They did the State National War Memorial.
Yes. Yeah. No, there were these big names, and I think that's where our education system sort of tended to concentrate. The big names, the big explorers, Edward Eyre, Charles Sturt, Stirling, the Davenports up in the hills.
The gentry.
But we didn't know the people who toiled at the ground level. But Billy, as an ex-convict too, always had this shadow of disapproval. And he wore a big smock to cover his arms. There's a professor at Adelaide called Paul Sendrick who says we know little about the convicts or ex-convicts because they went to great trouble to hide their identities. So he lived under this shadow. So he never, and he was never slow in coming forward. So he had fights with the police. He took people to court over money or whatever, and he burnt down his first daughter's house.
Why did he do that?
Well, it's, you can read the court cases in the newspapers at the time, and it was big news. I mean, it was huge stories in the newspaper. He was an angry. He had a temper. He was a feisty guy. And would you not be slightly feisty if you were whipped at age 11? You know, I mean, you'd turn out to be probably a bit of a bastard. Mm. Now, Sarah was obviously very long-suffering. She may have been, you know, a typical wife at the time, supporting the husband, but who knows? Maybe he made Sarah do it. Maybe he was a bit of a bully. Mm. But something went terribly wrong there. And I think he was reconciled to his daughter before he died, which was a lovely thought. But they obviously didn't get on with him, with his daughter and brother-in-law and son-in-law.
Yeah. Well, Alan, you're right. We often hear the stories of, you know, the
great names,
Pythangus and, you know, Sturt
and
all of those names, and Colonel Light and all those names. But you don't often hear of those who toiled, who worked the land, who you know, eked out an existence.
That's right.
And really were pioneers of agriculture. Yeah. And that area is a fertile area, isn't it?
Well, I'm trying in this, I suppose, to pay some tribute, not only to Billy, you know, but because he represented an awful lot of those workers who were unsung. And of course, I should mention, of course, that in the book, I'm not a historian, but I've intruded quite a lot of fascinating Atlantic, South Australian history that I've learned. Mm. And one of which, of course, was the Paramount people of the Mount Lofty Ranges, who were cleared off the land. You know, Edward Stirling said there's no future for them but extinction, you know, like. And so the Paramount people do feature quite a lot in this. And Billy would have come across a lot of the Paramount people as they were just shunted away so that we could build farms.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Not our greatest moment, is it? No.
Well, it's all part of that tapestry, and I try not to make too many judgments about it because Edward Stirling was a person of the time, and he was very down on the Aboriginals. He thought they would just be extinct. Sturt, by all accounts, was quite a humane and generous person. He had Aborigines and he had convicts on his travels with him. And John Horden in New South Wales, I mean, they employed convicts. But we had this notion that we could somehow be on a higher moral plane, you know, and we didn't have nasty people here, you know, who would lead us all astray.
Hey, congratulations, Alan. So you're actually launching the book this week.
It's being published this week. It's Greenhill in Port Adelaide is publishing it, and Wakefield is on board in terms of distribution, and then it'll be online on Amazon or whatever on the 24th. So we'll have a proper launch at some point, and you'll be invited.
Okay, Alan Atkinson, thank you. I'm author of The Trials of Billy Freeman. 26 past 10 is the time. You're listening to ABC